2019-00640-CV, City of Killeen versus Warsdale individually and as representative of the estate of Scott Warsdale, James Warsdale, et al. And here for appellant?
Samir Barrett with City of Killeen.
All right, sir. Thank you. And for appellees?
Tyler Talbert on behalf of the appellees, as well as Mr. Joe Luke.
Okay, and if I recall, you all are going to split some time. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's correct, Your Honor. I intend to present 15 minutes and reserve about 5 minutes for Mr. Luke.
Okay. Mr. Berry, if you want to go ahead and take the podium, and 15 and 5 division on your time then?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, very good.
May it please the court. The question before the court today is, did the City of Killeen have actual notice of the appellee's claims within 6 months of the injuries at hand? The Supreme Court has defined what actual notice is and what actual notice is not. The court has told us that actual notice is the information that a taxpayer-funded entity would have received had it been provided with formal written notice. This includes subjective awareness of its fault as ultimately alleged by the claimant. The court has also told us what actual notice is not. It is not enough that a governmental unit investigated a claim. It is not enough that a governmental unit should have known from its investigation that it was at fault. Should have known is not sufficient, the Supreme Court told us in TDCJ v. Simons. What has to be shown is that the City of Killeen was subjectively aware of its fault as ultimately alleged by these appellees. The evidence in the record does not show that.
Counsel, can subjective knowledge be shown with circumstantial evidence?
It can, Your Honor, but in this case, there is not circumstantial evidence to lead to that. There are inferences, and there are perhaps should have known arguments, but that is not sufficient under the case law.
And by the way, also in Simons, didn't it hold that or clarify that the governmental unit doesn't have to know that the claimant is actually asserting the claim? The concept is a claim exists, not that it's being asserted, right?
Well, it would have to be the same information that it would have received had it received actual notice. And just conducting an investigation would not meet that. Should have known.
In and of itself.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
In and of itself, an investigation would not. The bare fact of investigation, you don't infer from that there's actual knowledge.
Correct, Your Honor.
Of fault. Of course, if your investigation turned up a memo that or a videotape that showed the city committing some kind of culpable conduct, you'd say there'd be actual notice there, wouldn't you?
Well, as the court said in Simons, a governmental unit cannot acquire notice merely by obtaining information that would reasonably suggest its culpability.
Well, what if they just saw a videotape that showed, say, here a bunch of folks with City of Killeen t-shirts on blocking the road, hey, 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 and laughing about, hey, let's see who can run into this, you know, for funsies. And that turned the investigation turns that up. I mean, would you say there's no actual notice in that circumstance?
That would be a different fact pattern than we had before.
Okay. But the concept is not that you know, an investigation can turn up things that might give rise to actual notice. It's not that investigations don't matter.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
In this case, the investigation did not turn up evidence that would show subjective awareness of fault. What the investigation did find is that there was a hazard on a roadway. It found that the City of Killeen did not know who placed that hazard on the roadway. It found that an intoxicated driver without a motorcycle helmet did collide with that hazard, but it did not show that the City of Killeen was aware that it would be held to be at fault for the appellee's claims.
By the way, when we're talking about fault, that's with reference to the liability theory that the claimant eventually asserts, right?
It would have to be the claims ultimately alleged by the claimant,
which
yes, Your Honor.
Which here is premises liability negligence.
It is a failure to warn of a special defect.
Right. They're alleging special defect. They're saying, City of Killeen, you breached a duty you owed to fix, or warn of the big four, what's alleged to be, or there's some evidence, a 4-foot pile of dirt extending ditch to ditch in this roadway.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's their theory. No one's disputing that you had a, and Colleen knew of the 4-foot mound of dirt across the roadway.
There were officials in the city of Colleen who were aware of this, this mound.
Right, years beforehand. It seems the real fight on that aspect of the case boils down to, did Colleen have actual knowledge that they had the road, that the road was theirs?
Well, ownership would not be dispositive, Your Honor. In the Court of Appeals in El Paso, in the case of Rojas versus County of El Paso, faced an argument where a plaintiff attempted to distinguish the case of Carbajal versus City of Dallas mm-hmm. by alleging that because the County of El Paso owned and maintained a stop sign, that Carbajal was a factually distinguishable case. And the Court of Appeals in El Paso rejected that argument and found that even though the county did own and maintain that stop sign, which had fallen, that was not sufficient to lead to subjective awareness of its fault.
Wasn't the factor there? I mean, you'd get into an inquiry about, well, what point, when, who knocked down the sign? I mean, here it's a 4-foot-tall World War I-like trench emplacement-like blockage of a road that's been there for 2 years or more that the city knew about. That's not like a stop sign that gets knocked down. Man, that seems to me would be a different situation. I mean, it's going back to the nature of fault for which the city would have to have actual knowledge. You've got evidence that the city was aware, in fact, there was an annexation order that they possessed and controlled this roadway. That'd be actual knowledge of that. The actual knowledge of fault in the sense of the claimant's liability theories is we didn't warn about the 4-foot pile of dirt across the roadway. From that, in that circumstance, why would the activities that happened the day after? City gets out there, there's a police report talking about various discussions, and eventually, like 2 days later, the city crews are out there removing the dirt, opening up the roadway. Why can't a reasonable fact finder infer that the city had figured out we got some exposure on this premises claim?
Your Honor, the first question I'd like to address is the annexation ordinance was not, there's not evidence to show that it was found within 6 months.
First of all, your starting point is the pleadings. They allege this is alternatively, which they can do, county or city road. You've got the burden to conclusively negate those alleged facts. I think the evidence may fall well short of doing that, but in just the same, they put the evidence that of the annexation order, and that's in the record. Bell County presented it, but they asked the judge to take judicial notice. Certainly we can do that if the trial court didn't do it. I mean, it's in there.
It is, Your Honor, but it did not come up during the investigation after this accident. The police officer testified that he did not make a determination as to whether it was a city
or...
Well,
the city just have knowledge that it's their road all along? Isn't that actual knowledge of the city of Killeen? They annexed it?
The evidence in the record does not show that the city did have knowledge of the annexation as part of its investigation of this accident, Your Honor.
Why would it have to be part of the accident as such? It's like saying Killeen City Hall. I mean, if something happened there, they know it's their building. You know, it's not like you have to go show the investigation per se came up with that.
But we would have to show that the city knew that it would be blamed for these particular claims by these appellants within 6 months.
And is that not part of the reason for the notice requirement, to put the city on notice that it does need to go investigate things like that?
Yes, Your Honor. As courts have said, the policy behind the notice requirement is that so the city can investigate claims and settle claims and prepare for trial quickly before expending a lot of taxpayer dollars. And in this case, the city was not aware of this claim until it was served with a lawsuit a year and a half later. And as late as 2 years later, the plaintiffs were not sure whether their claim was against the city or the county. So how could the city have been sure this claim was against it if the plaintiffs weren't even sure who their claim was against? In addressing the subsequent remedial measures, Your Honor, which you asked about earlier, under Texas Rule of Evidence 407A, subsequent remedial measures would not be admissible to prove a need for a warning or an instruction. And at least one appellate court did hold that evidence of subsequent remedial measures were properly excluded in a failure to warn of a special defect case. Furthermore, other courts have appeals have dealt with cases where there was a city-owned malfunction, such as in San Antonio versus Herrera, a city-owned traffic light malfunctioned. There was evidence that the police were at the scene. There was evidence that public works technicians filed reports fixing the city traffic light afterwards. And again, the Court of Appeals held that there was no actual notice. Similarly, in Houston versus Atkins, where the city repaired a grate that was coming out of a roadway subsequently, and that the court still found there was no actual notice. In Houston.
Counsel, kind of following up on my colleague's question, just the subjective awareness of, it's subjective awareness of the alleged fault, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And we've got this provision that allows, if you do have actual notice, then you can bypass the written notice that's required. But if it's the allegation of fault by a potential plaintiff, what else would be required? I mean, how would you ever show actual notice of subjective awareness of alleged fault absent a demand letter from a plaintiff?
Well,
I know your position is it's not apparent in this record, but what else would be required for a plaintiff to show subjective awareness of alleged fault?
So this court, in the case of Concho County v. Goh in 2011, had evidence where Concho County responded to a TPIA request using the litigation exception to withhold information, stating that the county anticipated litigation. That was within 6 months of the claim. Evidence such as that would have been sufficient. There are cases such as Arancibia arising out of public hospitals where the sole instrumentality of harm was the government itself. The Supreme Court has said those are distinguishable from cases like Carbajal, but those are examples of what would have been evidence of fault, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Carbajal, by the way, seemed the linchpin was there was no allegation or proof that about whose road it was or who controlled the road.
That was
that arguably distinguished things that from the situation here, to the extent you've got allegations of proof that this is a clean, maintained, or controlled road.
Well, as the Court of Appeals at El Paso found, Your Honor, the ownership question was not dispositive there.
That was the stop sign case?
Yes, Your Honor. That was Rojas versus County of El Paso. And furthermore, the city was not aware of the ownership interest in the roadway as part of this investigation, to the point where it would have known of the fault that these claimants would allege against it a year and a half later.
It's not enough that, okay, we figure out we've got this road. Dang, there's 2 years been this pile of dirt that's been sitting out there that obstructs the roadway and somebody runs into it at night. That's not enough?
Well, the city did not know that it was its road at that time, Your Honor.
They figured it out within a day or two later.
The officer testified that in his investigation, which went on until the suspect, Mr. Worsdale, died, that in the course of his investigation, he did not make a determination as to ownership of the road.
If the city didn't think that it owned the road, why would it be that 2 days after the collision, the city crews are out there removing the dirt and opening the road? I mean, are they trespassing on private property, or are they, isn't that a fact consistent with a belief at a minimum that it's the city maintains and controls the road?
Well, the city wanted to prevent another accident from happening, and there was a hazard in the roadway that it wanted to remediate. It still did not believe that it owned the roadway, and there was some back and forth, as the police report shows, as to whether the city should remediate that hazard. Because at least one city official said, it's not our roadway, we shouldn't be out here moving this. But the police just didn't want another accident to happen, Your Honor.
So they could go on a private roadway and do that?
Perhaps a private landowner would have a trespass claim in such a situation.
What I'm getting at is just how, you know, we have to draw the inferences from the evidence in favor of your opponent. And it seems like those are facts that's a sort of, you know, walk like a duck, quack like a duck, that the city, some recognition by the city that at a minimum that this is their road, and then that would seemingly factor into whether or not they knew of their fault here, as would be let her be alleged. I mean, a premises claim is pretty straightforward. It's not like we're dealing with heart surgery. I mean, it's, you know, if you have an unreasonably, if you have a gaping sinkhole in the middle of a road, you know, and if you have a blockage in the roadway, essentially a wall of dirt, I mean, that's really the, and you don't warn about it, that's liability.
Can I answer the question, Your Honor? I think I'm out of time.
Well, I mean, that, go ahead and answer the question.
Well, inferences, as you said, Your Honor, the 14th Court of Appeals held that inferences are not sufficient in the case of Houston versus McGowan. In that case, and in Houston versus Atkins, there were a series of inferences, such as an EMS report, a public works report, and similar types of information that we have here. And the court said that cobbling together inferences is not sufficient to lead to actual notice. And that's what the appellees are attempting to do here, cobble together all these inferences. Well, maybe the city knew it was their road, maybe because EMS was there, maybe all of this. But as the 14th Court of Appeals explicitly said, cobbling together inferences is not sufficient to lead to a fact.
The notion that you can't stack inferences such that the ultimate conclusion you're drawing is more, you can't say it's more likely than not. Same time, though, I mean, certainly I think we've recognized certain actual knowledge can be proven by certain, indeed, in most cases, invariably must be in most cases proven by some circumstantial evidence.
It could be, Your Honor, but in this case, that evidence is
right,
not.
Right, in theory, I mean, I'm just, I mean, it would, question we have here is just at what point in that continuum are we here today?
Okay.
You'd say stacking inferences mm-hmm. versus circumstantial mm-hmm. proof.
And I think I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Yeah, we'll leave 5 minutes for you. Thank you.
May it please the court, and good afternoon. In the ultimate matter before this court, the appellees submit that the trial court did not err in denying the City of Killeen's plea to the jurisdiction. And there are three issues which guide this court's analysis in arriving at that conclusion. First, the evidence establishes that the City of Killeen did have actual notice. And at the very least, we have a fact issue as to that point. Second, the city's reliance on the case of Carbajal is misguided in light of the facts of this case. And third, this court can consider evidence of subsequent remedial measures in reaching its conclusion. Your Honors, this case is about accountability. The day after the accident that killed Heike King and Scott Worsdale, the city was on the scene conducting an investigation. What you see in the record is the city being asked by investigating officers who is responsible for this road, who should be maintaining this road, and asking the city deputy attorney if it is their obligation. Now, we expect better than this from the government. We expect that when the city goes out, conducts an investigation, and is aware of its alleged fault, that it does have actual notice. And that's exactly what the law provides.
Okay, well, you've now for about the third time said they had actual knowledge of this. Could you direct me to the location in the record where that is present?
And the relevant analysis here, Your Honor, as Justice Borland noted, is whether the city had subjective awareness of its alleged fault, as ultimately alleged by the plaintiff. And so when we look to evidence of was the city aware of its alleged fault, we can look to the police report on Clerk's Record, page 265, in which Officer Blinda notes he had substantial conversation with Tracy Briggs, deputy city attorney, about whether it was the responsibility. I'd point this court additionally to...
Okay, well, I have 265 here. Could you direct me there to... What I see here is that engineering department spokesman Paul Hopkins came out and spoke, said the city did not own the road, said the landowner, developer, or contractor probably blocked the road because they were trying to keep people from illegally dumping. The city at the roadway was at one time a county-owned road.
came into the city limits, but the city of Killeen didn't want it and gave the roadway back to the property owner. Officer contacted city legal department, spoke with the deputy city attorney, who said, well, if the city had abandoned it, there would be a city ordinance passed somewhere. So where in the midst of all that is the actual subjective awareness that is required?
Yes, Your Honor, and I would note just briefly, it's my intent to cover these three legal issues, and I was hoping to defer these last 5 minutes to some of the more relevant legal inquiry to Mr. Lee, who's a former assistant city attorney himself and one of the trial attorneys. But to answer your point, when you look at the deposition of Officer Blendon, who also penned that report, he says that he specifically questioned Tracy Briggs, deputy city attorney, who's responsible for this road. You see that on 305, 307, and 310 of the clerk's record. Who's responsible for maintaining this road? Who owns this road? He calls it a, quote, very large dispute. He says that it was a fight between the city and the county. Now, Your Honor, moving forward to the burden of proof, which I think we need to address before we dive in, as Justice Pemberton noted, there's kind of a three-step process we go through here. First, the plaintiff has to allege facts that establish a waiver of immunity. The plaintiffs did that in their petition. Secondly, and as Justice Pemberton noted, there have to be facts that negate those jurisdictional facts. The trial court's order is silent whether the city even met that burden. Even if the city gets past that burden, it's then incumbent on the plaintiff to create a fact issue. As this court has noted as recently as Suarez, the Supreme Court of Texas has, and back in Miranda, where there are fact issues, a court cannot grant a plea to the jurisdiction.
What are the disputed fact issues here?
Primarily, it is the extent of the city's awareness of its alleged fault at the time of the accident.
But the facts, the underlying facts are not in debate, are they? There's no dispute about the underlying facts. I mean, if there are, point those out to me.
And appellant notes that
I think what we're talking about is there is a dispute about the strength of an inference, if there is an inference that's possible to be drawn from the facts. Is that not what we're talking about?
Well, and really at the heart of this dispute, I believe, Your Honor, is what standard we are going to apply. You heard the appellant.
Well, I don't mean to hammer on something, but what facts are in dispute?
I don't know that there are facts that are in dispute. It is simply how we apply those facts to the relevant standard, Your Honor.
So if there are no facts in dispute, is it not then the court's obligation to answer this question as a matter of law?
It can. However, it's done on the same standard as a motion for summary judgment, resolving doubts in favor of the plaintiff's evidence, indulging
inferences. But that's where we have disputed facts.
Well, where there is a fact issue, correct, Your Honor?
Right. And I just ask you if we had any facts in dispute here, and you said no.
I don't know. I don't know that we do, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, you're fighting about the inferences to be drawn from the record, right?
That's correct, Your
Honor. And we got a big debate about that, certainly starting with the ultimate issue of actual notice, and also, I think, underlying aspects of the substantive liability claim, i.e. going to fault, that inform that. You know, what the actual knowledge of fault is all, you know, what they're having actual knowledge of.
Right, and that's correct, Your Honor. And that really brings us to the meat of the dispute. And as Justice Borland noted, what the appellant said was they did not have subjective awareness of fault. That's not the standard. When we look to the Supreme Court's decision in Simons, as well as Arancibia, we satisfy this second prong of the actual notice test, where the government has subjective awareness of its alleged fault as ultimately alleged by the plaintiff.
And on that point, counsel, let me ask you, is subjective awareness that it owned the road enough to chin the bar on subjective notice of the alleged fault the plaintiff might ultimately bring? You know, given the tragic nature of what happened, the estates and the representatives may have just chosen to never bring suit. They didn't want to relive it, or had been influenced by the alcohol aspect. I mean, how does just knowledge of the road, which the record may demonstrate, depending on how we draw those inferences, how does that get you there on knowledge of the alleged fault that these plaintiffs ultimately brought?
Sure. Part and parcel of ownership of this road is the obligation to maintain it and keep it safe. And we see this within a premises defect or a special defect claim, that where a party, such as the government here, owns the property, it has an obligation to maintain it and keep it reasonably clear from obstructions, such as a giant dirt berm in the middle of a road that someone may strike in the middle of the night. And so I would say those do go part and parcel. And when you look at what Officer Blendon is asking, it gets to this very issue. He says, who owned this road?
Because
who was responsible?
The premises owner is going to owe tort duties either as a lie to them as the decedents as a licensee or an invitee.
Correct. And the statute...
The duty of care is attached to the status of the premises owner.
That's correct. And we see that echoed within the actual Texas tort claims where it says the government may be liable to the same extent a private person could be liable.
So do I understand you correctly? The fact that there are questions being posed regarding ownership then is proof of the subjective awareness on the part of the city?
Well, and I want to point out the case of Arancibia to answer the question. The issue is whether the city is subjectively aware of the allegation of fault, whether it knows of its alleged culpability for this. So yes, what we submit is that when Officer Blendon says, aren't you responsible for owning this road? Aren't you responsible for maintaining this road? When it is a substantial dispute, when the city is aware that there's an allegation that it may own and therefore be obligated to keep this clear, that yes, that is sufficient under RNC.
So the fact that the possibility exists that the city owns the roadway affirmatively demonstrates subjective awareness of its fault.
Well, and it's far more than a possibility. It is awareness of its alleged fault.
But the alleged fault doesn't... Are you talking about the fact that there are questions being presented at the time, or are you traveling on down the road to the allegation in your petition?
At the time, Your Honor. And so here I would note, as was noted earlier, as the court noted in Arancibia, fault as it pertains to actual notice is not synonymous with liability. It pertains to responsibility for injury claim. The entire discussion the days after this accident was who is responsible for this road and therefore responsible for its maintenance. Now, specifically at the heart of this issue...
Let me ask you what this language means. It's not enough that a governmental unit should have investigated an incident as a prudent person would have, or that it did investigate, or that it should have known from the investigation that it might have been at fault.
And I believe that's
And then another quote actually from Simon. I guess that is from Simon. Merely investigating an accident is insufficient to provide actual notice. A governmental unit cannot acquire actual notice merely by conducting an investigation or even by obtaining information that would reasonably suggest its culpability. Is that not exactly what you're proposing from the question that is present at the time? Gosh, who owns this roadway? That sounds an awful lot like information that might reasonably suggest its culpability, and we have direct language that says that is insufficient.
And what the court in Simons was trying to do in 2004 was mediate between two extremes. And you see that in the case. On one extreme, you see a line of cases that suggest a city may have awareness where it would have or should have known. That's one extreme. On the other extreme, you have cases that suggest a city cannot be liable unless it subjectively finds itself liable. Mediating between those two extremes, what the court in Simons did says, no, the standard we're articulating today is awareness of its alleged fault. And why that is significant, practically speaking, is because once the government is aware that, oh, we may be liable here, then the purpose of the statute is satisfied. As the courts consistently noted, the purpose of the statute is to enable governments to collect.
Let me ask you, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're creating questions here. Where do you find the maybe at fault? Because what I'm reading is the governmental unit must have actual subjective awareness of its fault, not of the possibility of its fault.
Well, and what the court says in Simons and echoed in Arancibia is of its alleged fault, an allegation that it may be, and here defining fault as responsible for the injury claimed. And so I find that in Simons as well as in Arancibia, that where an allegation of fault exists, that's sufficient. And as I noted before, it is sufficient because the purpose of the statute is to enable governments to conduct an investigation. Where a government is aware that it may be at fault, that there is an allegation of fault, it's incentivized to conduct an investigation.
But the allegation of fault is your petition that comes well on down the road.
It's not, Your Honor. In this case, the appellees submit that the allegation of fault was the entire investigation. Okay. It was fire, city, engineering, inspector, legal, all taking part in an investigation to figure out what happened here, who owns this road, being specifically questioned. Did you own this road? Are you responsible for maintaining this road? Where the record says that the city and the county were pointing to one another saying you're liable, that is sufficient. I see I've got just a couple of moments here. If I could just briefly turn to the second and third arguments I wanted to cover real quick. And the second one is the city's reliance on Carbajal is misguided. What you see in Carbajal, as well as the cases that the city cites, is an analytical gap. In Carbajal, you have as the sole piece of evidence a police report that contains no indication of liability. This is exactly the same in every one of the cases appellant cites. City of El Paso v. Hernandez, no indication of liability. Ortegrin v. City of Denton, no suggestion that the city was at fault. You have an analytical gap. You have an accident, and you're somehow trying to connect the dot to prove that the city knew about it. All of these cases, there's an analytical gap. We have something to connect the dots here. We have an allegation that the city was responsible for the road. We have an allegation that it was responsible to maintain the road, to keep it clear from these dirt berms. So when you look at Carbajal and the facts here, not only do you have distinguishable facts in that there is something to connect that analytical gap, you have a wealth of additional evidence that was not contained in Carbajal. Finally, with this last 30 seconds, I just want to very quickly address subsequent remedial measures. Nowhere within the plain text of Rule 407 do you see any indication that this evidence is inadmissible. Really, what the appellant has done is conflated two arguments. There's an initial question, can this court consider evidence of subsequent remedial measures? And the answer is yes. And then a second question, can, in the cases cited, does that evidence of subsequent remedial measures rise to the level to establish actual
notice? Maybe cut to the chase on 407. The rule is evidentiary exclusion. It doesn't say that evidence is incompetent, right? That's
correct.
Do we have an order excluding the evidence?
We don't.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Game over.
And with a final second, I would ask this court to affirm the trial court's denial of the City of Killeen's plea to the jurisdiction. I'll turn over these last 5 minutes or so to Mr. Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, and good afternoon, Your Honors. I just want to clear up some things here. We're talking a lot about the facts of this case, and obviously the facts of this case that we have right now, we're looking through almost like a straw, because essentially we have not done full discovery in this case. We've gotten this factual information and this record from what the city determined to turn over on their own volition, of their own accord. So they have not gone through official discovery, and I believe that if we were able to go through official discovery, we would get a wealth of information that would show actual knowledge. That actual knowledge, Your Honors, has been talked about ethereally, but actual knowledge, all that is a substitution in 101, well, it's 101.101C, says 101.101A and B are not necessary if the city or the governmental entity has actual knowledge. So we're talking about actual knowledge and fault, but the three elements is that there was an injury or a death, and the governmental entity's fault-producing or contributing behavior, and then the identities of those people. And
counsel, not to interrupt you, but I was just thinking about that section of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code because it is the other side of the coin. That's the written notice required, but it requires notice of the damage or injury claimed, the time and place of the incident and the incident, it's and, all three of those. The damage or injury claimed. So the extent of the damage didn't manifest for a while. The type of claims that were to be brought, how did the city have knowledge of that, that then would substitute for 101.101?
Well, Your Honor, appellees would argue that they manifested themselves at the time of the collision itself. once the officer Blinden responded to the actual collision. Within 2 days, as Justice Pemberton mentioned, within 2 days, the city of Killeen had determined that they had owned the road, that they owed a duty.
Where is that in the record?
I believe that's on 265.
Well, I'll pose the same questions to you. I've got that here, and where on here does it state that within 2 days the city determined that it owned the roadway?
Or is that just an inference y'all are arguing from this? I mean, one day there's noted a dispute about between the county and the city. There's consultation with the legal department, and lo and behold, the next day the city crews come out and clear the roadway.
Well, that is a reasonable inference, Your Honor, and that is part of what we're claiming, but also...
If that roadway is open to the public, would it not be incumbent upon the city to do something to remediate what is clearly a dangerous situation?
It would be, and their subsequent remedial measures showed that, Your Honor. They determined,
But the fact that it's a public roadway does not necessarily mean that it's owned by the city, does it?
Not necessarily, but if you're going to expend taxpayer dollars to clean up this mess and to actually remediate the hazardous condition, I would expect that a city attorney who was on site, and that was in Officer Blinden's testimony, I believe it's two...
Well, so we're into the category of inferences and assumptions, are we not?
No, Your Honor. I believe that the subsequent remedial measures show, because the city of, as my co-counsel stated, I used to be an assistant city attorney for the city of Corpus Christi, and we were accountable for the taxpayer funds and the dollars that
but
we expended.
I just heard you say you would assume that a city deputy city manager was on site.
Deputy city attorney, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
And that was an assumption. That's actually in the record on 30. Make sure I got this right for you, Your Honor. 305, I believe, Your Honor, of the record, where Deputy City Attorney Tracy Briggs went on site, and that was within the 2 days, as I'd mentioned to Justice Pemberton. So essentially, as I stated, and we filed this with the court, the evidence, the City of Killeen's actual notice, and I think, again, looking at 101.101C, we get ethereal in determining whether or not the city had subjective awareness, but essentially what this is just an alternative to providing written notice to the city. And with every city official with the comprehensive police reports determining whether or not that road was under the control and maintenance of the city of Killeen, which is clear in the record, they came, did their subsequent remedial measures because they actually had knowledge of what happened. They had knowledge of the injury. Now, true enough, Scott Worsdale and Heike King did not die till months later, but it manifested itself on the day of the collision. It manifested itself in the clear indication of ownership and control of the road because the subsequent remedial measure shows that, Your Honors. I see that I'm out of time, but again, I would like to say thank you for your time, Your Honors, and the city of Killeen had actual notice.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I would like to respond to a few of the arguments made by the appellees. Their arguments essentially boil down to two things. One is that the city should have known from various information it found in its police investigation. And as the Supreme Court said in Simons, should have known is not enough. The second is this attempt to cobble together inferences and say, well, we can infer from this, infer from that, and put all of that together, and maybe that gets us to actual notice. But the 14th Court has faced that argument twice and rejected it both times, Your Honor. This is essentially a should-have-known argument and a cobbling together inferences argument, and that is not sufficient to be actual notice.
What is the interplay between knowledge of ownership of the road and knowledge of the ultimate claims alleged? Based on these cases that we're grappling with?
I suppose knowledge of ownership of the road could lead to an inference, but again, that's too attenuated to lead to subjective awareness of fault here, Your Honor. The city did not, within 6 months, conclusively know that it owned this roadway and had maintained it. Officer Blinden said that himself in his deposition, that it was a continuing topic of discussion with city legal, that the city kept insisting it did not own the roadway.
And really the linchpin on underlying liability theory, which may inform what the nature of the actual notice required really hinges on that ownership, because you've got what I think no one can dispute is a defect, a dangerous condition on a roadway, a big mound of dirt, no warning about it, sitting there. I mean, it really kind of hinges on whose road is it? Who's got the responsibility to maintain this road?
I think it hinges on...
That's the significance of what the city knew when about whether or not it was their road.
It is significant, Your Honor, because the city was not maintaining the road because they did not know it was their road. But I don't think that's the deciding factor that it hinges upon. What it hinges upon is awareness of fault.
Well, I know, but that's kind of that's the fault of which the city would not be aware, actually aware. I mean, if its actions were, if one could infer from its conduct that it was aware that it had that road, and then this premises problem, I mean, you put two and two together, you've arguably got actual notice of the fault that will subsequently be alleged by the claimants here.
I don't think that would lead to that, Your Honor, and I don't think that's what we have in this record, because as the police report, as you can see in the clerk's record on 265 and 266, shows that when these other departments were contacted by Officer Blendon for his investigation, they kept insisting it was not a city roadway, and they did not believe it was. Perhaps if they had, they would have maintained it differently, but at that time, it was not knowledge of the city that it should have warned of these defects.
Is there anything in the record that indicates that the city did an investigation into the damage or injury that might be ultimately alleged by the appellees? Or was it purely about the ownership of the road and the, you know, getting the berm remediated?
Is the question, did the city investigate their actual injuries and eventual death?
Yes.
Well, the city EMS did come
and
to
And is that in the record is what I'm asking.
There is some in the police report. It really shows up in the record because, the suspect in the case was Mr. Worsdale himself, and it's in the kind of near the end of the police report. He writes that he closes the case because Mr. Worsdale died and was too injured to really bring a case against. So it does show up in that context. And there are references to it because it was a police investigation of a traffic accident. But as courts have consistently held, routine police investigations of traffic accidents are not sufficient to create actual notice on the part of the city.
Say that again.
Well, courts have consistently held that routine police investigations of traffic accidents are not sufficient to create actual notice. The appellees here like to discuss what was a very large topic of discussion at the scene, and what the officer said in his testimony is that the very large topic of discussion was why were there not any barricades despite the fact that they knew the roadway had been blocked. The fact that there weren't any barricades is the same information that was in the police report in Carbajal. And as the Supreme Court said conclusively in Carbajal, a police report that just says that missing barricades caused an accident is not sufficient to lead to a subjective awareness of fault. And I'm out of time now, Your Honor. But thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank both sides for your presentation. The case will be submitted for consideration, and the court will stand in recess.